Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
We welcome you to Talking.Golf here, recording on a Monday, August the 7th, alongside Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here. We're still between sponsors here on Talking.Golf, but we thought we'd give a shout out today to our friends over at the Mac Fund, Mike Bilowski and company. You can go to macfund.org, M-A-C-C-F-U-N-D as in dog, .org, and read about one of the great causes in Wisconsin. It has such a great history going back to when John McLaughlin and Eddie Doucette kind of launched the effort to raise money for childhood cancer in the Milwaukee area, and it's grown statewide, nationwide. And they continue to do great things. And my colleague today, Gary D'Amato, was out at the Mac Fund Golf Outing, an annual event at Tuckaway Country Club. And Gary D., before we start talking golf, we got to start talking about golf causes. And I tell you, there's no better cause than the Mac Fund. It just it has stood the test of time, continues to do great things, and it must have been a great day out there at Tuckaway.
It was, Rob. We had great weather. That day is very special to me, even though, thankfully, you know, I've never had children who have had that kind of health problem or cancer, or my grandchildren. Thankfully, everyone's been healthy. But I know a lot of people, well, everyone knows people who have been touched by cancer, and especially when it hits young kids and children, it's very tough. And the Mac Fund, this was the 46th annual Mac Fund Open, the very first event that the Mac Fund held. Not only have, you know, dozens and dozens of different kind of events, you know, bicycle races and bike rallies and lots of golf throughout the state and all kinds of events. But this was the first event that they had the year after they formed the Mac Fund. And so 46th annual. And Rob, one of the women who's who benefited from the Mac Fund, but unfortunately her daughter died of leukemia, got up and gave such an emotional speech that I just heard sniffles throughout that whole room during the dinner, and I had tears rolling down my cheeks. And it's a great cause, and I'm happy to support it.
You know, I've been involved with the Mac Fund through my time back in Wisconsin, working with the Wisconsin Basketball Coaches Association. Their summer All-Star game directly benefits the Mac Fund, so I had a chance to meet John Kerry, used to be the executive director, and the passion that he brought to that position was second to none. And, you know, it's in great hands now with Becky Pinter and Mike Bilowski and that whole staff, that, you know, really basically spends their summer going from event to event, raising money, you know, and you talk about, you just never know who's going to be impacted by cancer, by, you know, anything involving, you know, the kids that, you know, have to deal with the various forms of cancer that we're seeing today. But, you know, one that we ran into Brian Butch at the U.S. Senior Open, his son Blake, had to battle brain cancer for a while. It seems like he's on the right path with that. But, you know, as a young parent, you know, there's nothing, you know, more scary than having a child who is somewhat and indeed helpless to the situation that they've been dealt. And knowing that you have great, you know, resources behind you, some of them, you know, channeled through the Mac Fund, I think is great, and glad you were able to go out there. It was a scramble event, I understand, and a blazing start, but a very quiet finish for great Team D'Amato.
Well, Rob, we might have set a scramble record for most consecutive pars. We were 3 under after 5 holes and finished the round with 13 consecutive pars. That's really good golf if it's not a scramble, but in a scramble, that doesn't get you anywhere.
it's great golf in the U.S. Open, right? Or
yeah, exactly.
At the British Senior Open a couple of weeks ago, that would have won the thing. But even yesterday on Sunday when Bryson DeChambeau shot the 58. To win the live event, you know, there were a lot of chuckles about how that was almost a scramble score, and it was, but, so that good. Well, it was all for a good cause, all for a good time. And when you can play in good weather, that's even better. And, it got you away from having to cover golf for a little while. Lord knows we've been on quite a binge, with golf tournament coverage. And, you know, you talked about low scores last week. The Wisconsin junior boys started out with a whole cluster of low scores, at the Legend at Bergenland with Charlie Erlandson open with a 63, Mason Schmidtke a 64. Ultimately, it was a kid that maybe a lot of our listeners haven't heard of, Andrew Bauer out of Chippewa Falls. He's headed to UW Stout to play college golf this fall. He was part of the Chippewa Falls McDonald Eau Claire Regis co-op that did so well at the state tournament up at Black Wolf Run in Division II. Andrew has a neat kind of story. You told it very well, Gary. It was funny because you were texting me updates, and I was following it, you know, along from out here, and Andy DeLong got back to me on a text I'd sent him from a couple of days earlier, and he's the men's and women's golf coach up at UW Stout in Menominee, and he said, make sure whoever's writing that story gets in there he's going to UW Stout, and that became the theme, and it was a pretty strong message that got a pretty strong reaction on social media from people that you know really appreciated what Andrew Bauer had to say about going the Division III route.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. You know, he wound up in a playoff with two outstanding players, Mason Schmidtke, who's headed to Marquette, and Charlie Erlandson, who at some point we believe is going to be on University of Wisconsin's golf team. So two Division I guys, Andrew plays Division III golf, but it just shows, what a fine line it is, you know, between D1, D2, D3, all these guys can play. And, you know, Andrew had to battle some things down the stretch, but, including, you know, he had a one stroke lead going on in the final hole, Rob, and hit a ball in a hazard, had to take a penalty stroke, but then he made a great up and down for a bogey, very clutch chip and 6 foot putt to get in a playoff. And then wins the playoff. Showed a lot of guts, Rob. It was another fun tournament to cover. I've seen a lot of great golf this summer, and this was one of the better tournaments I've covered.
Well, and I look at Andrew Bauer's, you know, resume. He's kind of at a point in his career where, you know, he's not playing in a lot of junior stuff. In fact, he finished T7 at the WPGA Junior Championship, finished T32 in Division II, well, overall, I guess, when they do the points thing. At Black Wolf Run, and then, wins the state junior. I'm pretty sure I'll have to go back and look, but pretty sure we saw him, cause we saw a lot of people at the Wisconsin State Amateur at, Erin Hills. And, but, you know, he's at a point now where, it's all about college golf. And, you know, I don't know if you talked to him much. We haven't really connected on his recruiting story, which would be very fascinating because, you know, I think one of the questions people had was, did he have Division I offers and why Division III? It seems, Gary, like the answer to that question was, for him, it was just a better fit.
Yeah, I think so. I didn't really get into, you know, the offers that he might have had, if he had any offers from Division I schools. You probably know more than I do about that, Rob, but, I'll tell you what, though, it's almost indistinguishable between the talent when you get to the top, you know, the very top percentage of junior players in our state. They're all so good. They all hit the ball so far, Rob. I mean, it's just crazy the way they attacked Legend at Bergamon. I couldn't imagine even from the forward tees hitting the ball to some of the spots these guys hit the ball to. They all hit a 320 and 340. And Andrew certainly fits right in there. He's long. He's just got a lot of game, and Stout's getting a good one, Rob.
We've talked about this before, Gary, about, you know, the right fit. And it's a question I get routinely from parents of kids who are going through this process. In your mind, what ought to be the, you know, and we can debate this. I'll have you go first. You know, what should be the checklist of things that you're looking at in a college? And if you're a kid in Andrew Bauer's situation, coming from a, you know, medium-sized private school in West Central Wisconsin, and you look at in his region, last year, Parker Etzel committed to the University of South Dakota, and then just last week, Will Schlitz, WIA state champion in Division I in 2022, committed to St. Thomas University up in St. Paul, and you know, so we're not talking Stanford, Wisconsin, even Marquette. And, you know, you kind of are left with a lot of different options, maybe for some of these kids in different parts of the country. What would you say would be your checklist for proximity and what you'd be looking for in a school if either you were a parent going through the process, Gary, or a college or a high school athlete looking to go play golf in college?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, for a guy like Andrew and for the vast majority of junior golfers out there who are going on to play college golf, I think the academic fit has to be number one because, as we know, Rob, it's a very, very, very small percentage of college golfers who go on to be successful, you know, on many tours and get to the highest levels of golf. So it's hard. And I would think that academics and a program that you're really interested in and have a passion for would be number one. Number two, you know, in a guy like Andrew Bauer's case, maybe I'm not sure if he had Division I offers, but maybe he looked around and saw that, you know, if he goes to a Division I school, he's either going to walk on or he might not play for a year or two, and then he'll have to battle for a 4 or 5 spot. And maybe Andrew said, you know what, I can go to Stout and maybe I can make the lineup right away and maybe I can contribute and eventually be a number one player for that school. I think all that goes into the equation. I'm sure there's more, I'm sure you're going to cover that now.
Well, I think, you know, what you said about academics has to be number one. And that's something, as I, you know, when I covered high school sports back in Madison, and talked to, especially people who were advising, in all sports, academics was number one. There was a basketball trainer I talked to who said that, every kid that he, tutored or mentored about, you know, making that jump to the college level, he would ask the question, what would happen if you blew out your knee and you were left to only go to school and go to classes at the school you choose? Would that be enough? And that has to be what you do with golf, you know, and the college decision as well. And I think there's a really good example. She won the Lake Arrowhead Invitational Girls Division today, Kylie Walker out of Kenosha. She's probably in the top 5 in my rankings in this year's senior class, had a lot of opportunities to go to Division I schools, but she, A, wanted to play golf with her twin sister in college, Caitlin, who's also very close in ability level to her, but there was such a fine line between the two that a lot of college coaches saw a difference. I don't see that difference, but a lot of college coaches did. They also had offers to go elsewhere. They're going to go to Division II Ferris State. And typically when we talk about Division II Ferris State, we talk about their PGM program, the Professional Golf Management program. Well, Kylie really wants to go, and she had this in a survey she filled out for a college showcase that the state high school coaches put on every year at Whistling Straits, that pharmacy was a very strong consideration for, you know, what she wanted to study in school. Ferris State is a very good, very reputable pharmacy program. She wanted to go there. Ferris State wanted her for golf. They also wanted Caitlin. Now, there were other schools that they could have sought out that would have taken them for golf, but what does the academic component hold? So that's the big thing. Now, once you have the list of schools that offer your major, my opinion is, Gary, that you need to have a place where the coach is going to make you better and the school has an opportunity to go beyond the scope of their regular season. In Division III, in women's golf in the state, it means winning your conference championship, whether it's the NAC, whether it's the WIAC, whether it's the UMAC up with UW-Superior, you win that, you go to your national championship. That's great. Division II, Division I, you need to play well enough to get a regional berth, which is why, again, we talked at length, you know, a couple times here about UW-Parkside. In a conference that's very reputable, just started a women's program, has 2 gals for this fall, trying to get up to, you know, actually 3 women now for this fall, trying to get a 4th. And then, but they're in a conference, Gary, that is strong in relation to this region compared to the conference, that includes the Minnesota and South Dakota schools, the Northern Sun. The Great Lakes Intercollegiate Athletic Conference will get multiple NCAA berths. The Northern Sun typically gets 1 and they're done. And so you need to take that into consideration. But I'm always thinking that, you know, you want to win your conference. You want to go on to the postseason. It seems to be that way in high school sports. Seems to be in, you know, that way in college sports. Those are 2 big goals. I would think that would be high on the list once academics are in there. And then in hand with that, you need a good coach. You need a coach who's going to stay there, a coach that's going to make you better. And obviously, you know, as we go back to Andrew Bauer, the other thing about Division III that's different than 2 and 1 is that you really call the shots when it comes to your time and your path to go to the end of your college career. There are a number of schools around the state that have nursing programs. There's a number of schools around the state that have accounting programs. Those are two academic majors, Gary, that require a lot of internship type of work and a lot of tailored work at certain times of the year that may not go hand in hand with a college golf career. You've got to find yourself a program with a coach that has a deep enough program to say, okay, you don't have to go to this tournament. We might need you the next time, but where they can be flexible. The flexibility at Division III, Gary, is I think my daughter played at Division III and she saw that. I think the flexibility is really what is starting to get people to sit up and take notice about the opportunities there versus Division I and Division II, where you sign the letter of intent to get an academic or an athletic scholarship. You are also signing up to be kind of, at their, within their framework, within their system as to how things go. And especially at the Division I level, there are some practices that will be held at 2:30 p.m. come hell or high water. And if you have a class you really want at 2:30, you're going to have to let that one go.
You know, I'm what you said just now reminds me of a Division I coach who shall remain nameless, who said he didn't want engineering students going on his team because they study too much, they work too hard in class, and there's some truth to that. I mean, if you have a very difficult major, it's very hard to balance Division I golf with a very difficult, demanding major. The other thing I would say, Rob, is that, you mentioned a coach that can make you better. I would say also a team, a lineup that can make you better. If you go to a school where you're going to be the number one guy and not get pushed, you're probably not going to improve. But if you go to a school that has a pretty deep lineup where you're competing for spots, to go to tournaments, I think that's going to make you better too.
And we're starting to see that. That's a great point, Gary, because we're starting to see that here in the state and kind of a trickle-down effect. We had great seasons this year from both Wisconsin and Marquette. UW-Green Bay struggled, but they've got two really strong recruiting classes coming in here the next 2 years. And Lee Reinke's hoping that they build off of that and continue to get the guys. Brent Whelan coming in next year. He'll be a senior this fall out of Milton, is a huge recruit. And his dad was a Dennis Tiziani recruit at Wisconsin in the days when Dennis Tiziani would only recruit Wisconsin or largely recruit Wisconsin, and won a Big Ten championship with Kirk Whelan in his class in the program. And it was almost an all Wisconsin lineup. And so we've kind of solidified, those three programs. So now we trickle down to UW Parkside. Carly Weary's taken over, a really strong program there, and has a really good recruit coming in from River Falls and Matthew Marshallek, and is hoping to get more for, next year and the year, years beyond. And now that she's come in, is really starting to recruit Wisconsin perhaps a little heavier. Danny Sinicki, who qualified for the state open today in the last chance qualifier, just wrapped up a really solid career with his brother Steven at Parkside. There's a lot of potential there. The program that's kind of set the tone in the Division III level is UW-Eau Claire. Darren Skinner's done a wonderful job building both quantity and quality. And right there in to what you were talking about, Gary, you have to work your tail off to get the top five at UW-Eau Claire. And maybe Andrew Bauer saw that and said, maybe my chances are better at Stout. Plus, Stout has a really solid group at the freshman sophomore level with Andy DeLong, who just kind of took over the program about 3 years ago. And Hunter Newman out of Toma, real solid kid there. His sister Bryn is the one that's at Parkside and one of the three women that'll start up the women's program there this fall for Carly Weary. But, Hunter's played in a lot of great tournaments this summer and continues to get better and better. I think, Andy DeLong's team at Stout, Darren Skinner's team at UW-Eau Claire, because the WEAC doesn't have a conference for men's golf, they're courting the same at-large berth, but they're moving in the right direction. And Andrew Bauer will help them get there quicker if they can find maybe one, possibly two more Andrew Bowers. It's going to be pretty interesting. I think Stout getting better makes Eau Claire better. Eau Claire being better makes all the other schools better. And it really, kind of puts that chip on their shoulder going in to compete against the Minnesota schools who have the automatic berth, but oftentimes get the second at large from this part of the country. And if you can start knocking off those teams and then start going out and knocking off teams regionally and in some of the tournaments that that I know Darren Skinner schedules down in Kentucky and some of these that go after the Golf Week top 15, top 20, you know, you can get where you want to go. But I think it's fascinating. I was really, you know, it was interesting to look at the results last week, Gary, from you know, from the state junior. Now, Andrew Bauer did play in the state AM, shot 81-80, which wasn't bad at Erin Hills, missed the cut by about three shots. But I'm sure, you know, and we see this a lot with the high school kids that play in the state AM, they usually fare pretty well than coming back and playing in the state junior. Charlie Erlinson was an alternate for the state AM, so he didn't get that experience. But obviously Mason Schmidtke did. They all played pretty well. You know, Nick Mueller out of Baldwin, I think he might be a Stout guy too, or one of the Muellers is going to Stout, one's going to Eau Claire. And then, you know, you look at William Harned going to Wisconsin, Will Schlitz out of Eau Claire, Peyton Albers and Casey Nickel out of Wanakee, and Bodie King. Bodie King out of Heartland taking a gap year. And Casey Nickel, you know, an uncommitted kid from the class of 2024 who's going to make some coach real happy. He might be a Green Bay level, possibly a Parkside level, you know, kid that could really make a difference. But, you know, the WSJ does such a good job, A, making the state AM available to young golfers, where they can actually, you know, try to qualify. Even the qualifier is a good experience, but certainly this junior. And then to see how they set the course up for the junior, it was a score fest on day one, and it got harder and harder the next 2 days. And when you got there on, you know, for that final round, that was had to be pretty tense stuff over there at the Legend at Bergamot.
Yeah, you know, Jeff Perk, who set up the course with the WSJ, lengthened the course each succeeding day. I think it was 6,500 yards for the first round, which helped explain some of those scores, because as I said before, they all hit it so far. But then they lengthened the course by 200 some yards the second day, and for the final round, Rob, with the flagstick locations figured in, the yardage, course yardage was 7,041 yards, which is the longest venue ever in the history of the Junior Boys Championship. So it was a big, it was a big boy golf course. And, that's why the scores went up a little bit. But yeah, like I said, you know, they all hit it so far, and, the talent is just keeps getting better and better every year. Mason Schmidtke, you know, we've watched him play a lot of golf. First high schooler to win the Ray Fisher. He's going to be a star at Marquette, Rob.
That's fascinating about the course setup, Gary. And of course, you know, the Legend of Bergamot, the home course for Badger coach Mike Wilson. He lives out there in Oregon. And, yeah. And you know, I tell you what, I mean, you talk about it, a great test. And if it, you know, once word, I'm sure word gets around that, you know, this is the way we set this up. Because, you know, we go back to when Jerry Kelly was trying to make it on the PGA Tour, went to Bob Rotella. Bob Rotella said, play up two tees and try to attack the course and see how low you can go. That's what that round one setup was. That was a challenge to these kids to take it low and see who can do it. And it was a wide variety of kids too, because there were, you know, a number of kids that, you know, maybe we hadn't heard of, kind of opened the field up to, you know, some kids. Hunter Thibert out of Mequon, who you wrote about, after I believe it was second round, after he opened 66-69, you know, kid that's going to go to San Diego State, try to walk on. Great, great confidence builder there. Didn't have a great final round, but learned a lot. I'm sure, you know, if he gets that chance out in San Diego, he's going to do quite well. And then you make it progressively harder, and then it goes basically within the span of 3 days, Gary, from the Ray Fisher, where it is a score fest at the amateur level, to the state amateur, which we saw it at Erin Hills. Was a white knuckler, hold on for your dear life. And, you know, what a great opportunity for these kids to have that thrown their way over the course of 54 holes in 3 days.
It really is. And we should mention, Rob, that, you know, WSGA has a long history of setting up challenging courses at all levels, which is why, winning a state amateur or winning a boys junior or any of the tournaments that WSGA coordinates and organizes is. It's tough. You know, remember Gene Haas, people always complained about his course setups because they were so difficult. And then Bill Linneman, set up the courses in the same manner. And now Jeff Perkle is doing the same thing. And they really challenge the players on all levels. They test all their abilities commensurate with their, you know, with their age and ability. And, it's great to see. You could set up courses that would be birdie fest all the time. And then these kids would go on to college and be confronted with some, you know, tough conditions and not know how to handle them.
Well, you're right. And the ones who complained never complained when they got to the PGA Tour. They were the ones thanking Gene Haas and going out of their way to thank him. Guys like Steve Stricker, JP Hayes, and Skip Kendall, and Jerry Kelly even too, you know, because it just made them better. I don't think they ever saw a tougher course setup than they did growing up and coming through the Wisconsin ranks. So that's pretty cool. We should also mention that last week was a change to a what's become a time-honored tournament, almost a record field for the Sherry Steinhauer. It went from 36 to 54 holes, and they added Nakoma Golf Club for the second round. And it went Blackhawk, Nakoma, Blackhawk, and it went to a three-hole playoff between Vivian Kressman, Peyton Haugen, and Kylie Walker. And it was Vivian Kressman on her home course at Blackhawk who managed to make a par on the 17th hole, the third time they played it that day, and outlasted Peyton Haugen and Kylie Walker, who both made bogey. Gary, we've covered enough golf at Blackhawk to know the sideways fairway on 17 has claimed many a victim over the year, and you can add a couple more. Vivian Kressman did a wonderful job. She aimed so far right. Jazz Tulda of the WPGA had a live Instagram video going, and I was watching her set up. She was the last to hit off of that tee in the playoff, and she aimed so far right that ball, it looked like hitting in the right rough, bounced into the fairway, and by the time she was chip into that green on 17, I think she was in the first cut of rough on the left-hand side of the fairway. As Van Stout told me Izzy Stricker played in, or Bobby Stricker played in, I guess it was the State Women's Open this year, that's the cleanest fairway in the state of Wisconsin because no one can hit it. No ball stays in that fairway. So we all know 17 can decide a lot of things, but 16, 17, and 18 are three of the great finishing holes in the state. And for a course as short as Blackhawk, it can really extract a toll.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that we both got to cover playoffs on the same day, one on the boys' side, one on the girls' side. And I love the fact that Sherry Steinhauer comes back for this tournament in her name and presents the trophies. It's so great for her to come back to Madison and be a presence and be someone, you know, that these young ladies have looked up to, but now they get to actually spend time with her and be around her. I think it's so cool.
Absolutely. And of course, coming up here, this week, at the end of the month, actually, in a couple of weeks, it'll be the U.S. Senior Women's Open, and Sherry Steinhauer exempt from qualifying along with Becky Iverson. It's actually at the end of August, the 24th through the 27th at Waverly Country Club in Portland, and our friend Maggie Leaf qualified in the Chicago qualifier last week, and she's looking forward to going back to her third U.S. Senior Women's Open. Gary, we've got a lot to cover yet because you were a busy guy writing stuff that got a lot of reaction on Wisconsin.golf. After the junior stuff was done last week, you got a chance to take a look at the newly renovated TPC Wisconsin, the former Cherokee Country Club. And there were a lot of questions before your story. I think a lot of those were answered with your story. And I think a lot of people saw a lot of things about the TPC Wisconsin project that opened their eyes to the scope of it. And why don't you kind of tell me what your impressions were seeing the finished product over there on the north side of Madison?
Yeah, Rob, I think it's a very interesting golf course because I wouldn't really compare it. It's got elements of some other courses in our state, but I wouldn't. It's really hard to pigeonhole or categorize it as a certain kind of golf course. It's got links characteristics with firm fairways, which people who once played the old Cherokee probably wouldn't believe the fairways are going to be firm, but they are. Sand-capped, firm fairways. The greens, the direct result of Steve Stricker's influence with really cool bunkering and runoff areas, collection areas around the greens, so you're going to have some short game skills and short game imagination when you miss greens. And then, you know, there's a lot of water features. So it kind of reminds me a little bit of maybe a Florida course. It's pretty flat with some water features. So a lot of different elements to deal with, including the wind. It was in great condition, Rob. I was surprised. I didn't think it would be as good as it is. There are a couple holes that were seeded last that are still, you know, there's still some, some spots that need to come in and grow in a little bit. But overall, I thought the course was really, really, really good. And, my question, I guess, is Dennis Tiziani, this is his project. He has shepherded it from the very beginning. And Rob, he told me it's by the time they're done, it's, you know, inside the clubhouse and out, everything is going to cost close to $24 million. And he has to pay $300,000 a year to the PGA Tour for the TPC brand. I don't know. How do you recoup that money? I mean, he couldn't give me a direct answer on that. He said it's going to have to come from operations and member fees. But, boy, that's a lot of money that they've sunk into that place. It shows, too. It's really good-looking golf course.
Well, and you know, you do the math, 120 members as of the time that you wrote the story. He wants 250. You know, 350 have expressed an interest and joining will take will tour, what's out there. But boy, and I get it. You know, this is a special kind of opportunity. It's a special network. You get, you buy into one TPC course and you kind of, in some way, shape or form, you get them all. But much yeah. like I still think there's a fee that has to be paid when you go to other ones. I think what your story did was it told people that, yeah, if you have the money, this would be a great opportunity for you. But I'm not sure what the membership fee is, but it's significantly more than Cherokee Country Club, because we know that a number of the Cherokee members didn't follow the, didn't stay around for the TPC, part of it. But, again, it's a different concept. I'm not sure it's even a club that a lot of traditional country clubbers want to be a part of. It's going to be unlike anything we've seen in the state because of the combination of tournament course and the combination of learning facility. And, they're in the middle of a huge renovation of a very old clubhouse, which also has to be part of the equation.
Yeah, there's going to be some national membership. There are going to be some people from outside of Wisconsin who join this place who are, TPC members at other places. And they do have reciprocals with the other 29 TPC courses and also courses throughout the world that don't carry the TPC brand, but that are sort of partner courses of the TPC network in Europe and Asia. And from what I understand, depending on the TPC you go to, you can play the other TPC courses six times a year if you're a TPC member. So you can play all 29 of those courses six times in a year. Some of them require only a cart fee. Some of them you have to pay a little bit more than that. But I worry. I guess my concern would be, and these guys have thought it through, obviously. But where is all the money going to come from to pay for all this? It's a very expensive renovation here.
There must be. It kind of feels like it's a. When you buy into the TPC network, you are adding value to that overall product. So if I'm here and if I'm, going to throw my money down at the TPC Scottsdale, knowing that I can go play the TPC Wisconsin six times, that's added value. I'm guessing that there must be some residual that comes back to, each of the courses in the network, but it's not $300,000. I mean, that's silly money there. That's just at the same time, there's a lot of ways to make money through golf too.
Yeah. And, they were reluctant to share the cost of membership because Dave Olishek, the vice president of operations, said we have five different levels of membership just for golf. And then we have, we have racket sports memberships and, they have a number of different levels of membership. So he couldn't throw out a number and say, this is the number it costs to join. And, but people who are interested, who want to take a look at it, should go to the website. I believe it's tpcwisconsin.com and click on the membership page. And you can probably wade through that and find out some of the information you need. But, 250 members. Hopefully Tiz and the guys there get that many members. As you mentioned, they have 350 people who have sort of filled out requisitions that they would like to play the course and explore membership. However, I would be willing to bet a large percentage of those people, Rob, just want to play the course.
Yeah.
And they're not going to become members.
And I'm sure you've gotten some inquiries, as have I, about, how, can you play the course? And you know, my answer to them is, you know, given where they're at right now with their membership, yeah, I think there's a lot of preview rounds, and that's going to be important. And with anything that people see value in, especially locally, you know, this is a new concept. This is, you know, you might see, you know, if somebody's in the area that's a PGA Tour sanctioned, golfer that has status on, I believe it's now just the Korn Ferry Tour or the PGA Tour, they have privileges at the TPC courses around the country.
That's right. Yeah.
And then the PGA Tour champions. So you never know who you're going to run into at a TPC course, and those that join them for the stature. I mean, I think that's another thing too. It's a membership level that, you know, we haven't seen in this area either. I think we should also talk about the fact they've got great people there in addition to, you know, the Tiziani family and, Steve Stricker. You mentioned the Travis Becker, who, was at Cherokee Country Club, went to, was lured down to the Beloit Club when they, established their, great, learning facility with the Ironworks Golf Lab downtown in Beloit, you know, he became a very popular junior golf instructor. Well, he's been hired back and will lead the, instruction part of it. And he's the director of golf too. So he's got a lot on his plate, but, he also knows, as do Dennis and Larry Tiziani, because let's face it, Gary, those guys are ageless when it comes to, their instruction and working with young kids. They're still the ones that ultimately kids go to if they really want to get better, in addition to guys, you know, the other teachers around the state. But, you know, Travis learned under them, and I think a lot of what, you know, he learned, you know, is now making him a very successful instructor. But, boy, that learning component to TPC Wisconsin, I think, is going to be through the roof good.
Yeah, I agree, Rob. They're going to have lots and lots of junior golfers and beginners and even skilled golfers going through their various programs and the academy and the learning center. And that will be another revenue stream. You know, that's not one that is going to cover $22 million, but that will be a revenue stream for them because they're going to have lots of programming and, it'll be affordable, but they're still going to, I mean, they're in a business, right? They still have to make money. And so that's another revenue stream that I know they're going to be counting on.
Anything, Gary, in the reaction you got to the story that surprised you?
No, not really. You know, I was just on, as we're recording this, on Monday evening, I was just on Dennis Tiziani's and Paul Brown's radio show with Mike Keller, and we talked a little bit about it. I guess nothing really surprised me. I was surprised how good a shape it was in, because I had heard, you know, that it was a little bit rough a month or two ago. And even Steve Stricker, when I talked to him about 6 weeks ago, he wasn't sure that some of the holes would be ready in August, and they sure looked ready to me.
Well, I think it speaks to the growing season that we've had. It speaks to the level of care that went into the to both the design and construction of it. They moved swiftly in a short period of time. Obviously, you mentioned how much this cost. I mean, you can't have the product shut down for too long, and it closed a year ago, and it's already, you know, seen its first round. So that's a pretty good turnaround time for a course of that level. And of course, in 2025, it'll host the American Family Insurance Championship. I'm guessing there'll be some residual money going back to the course there, you know.
Sure.
And that might help as well, I would hope, in the contract. But, you know, good to hear that it's in good shape. Good to hear that, you know, I think, and just looking at it, you know, you mentioned it's unlike anything we've seen. You know, when we talk links courses in this state, we typically see a lot of fescue involved. And I think, you know, as I look at the pictures that Jim Kelch took that are on our, accompanying your story, we see a little fescue, but it's mostly just thick grass, you know, really good, traditional, strong rough, which is, to me, what makes a championship course.
Yeah, there's no doubt, Rob. It's going to be tough. I mean, when those guys come in on the PGA Tour champions and when they move those tees back, I mean, there are a couple tees where Dennis told me Steve doesn't want to play off those tees because there's some 270-yard carries from the back tees over water. And not even Steve Stricker will go back to those tees. So it's going to be a challenge for those guys, depending on how they set it up. But I think we're going to see some higher scores than we're used to seeing in the AmFam Championship, Rob. Let's put it that way.
Well, we're looking forward to it. You know, it's been a lot of anticipation when the idea was broached. We thought, well, I hope they know what they're doing. But I, you know, and reading some of the things that went into the actual physical change from Cherokee Country Club to TPC Wisconsin in terms of the golf course and taking out some of the things that, you know, made Cherokee vulnerable, in wet seasons, I think was really, really strong. And then of course, you know, Dennis and Steve's love for the outdoors, Larry Tiziani for that matter, Larry, you know, famous for going into the ponds out there at Cherokee and fishing out golf balls to sell back in the pro shop. But, I think he was also fishing at that point too. And those waters became almost, you know, uninhabitable for fish, by the end. So what they've done from a natural standpoint is really given back to that side of town too. So I think everybody's excited about it, Gary, and they certainly were excited to read your story. It shot up right to number one in our list of top stories here in the last week. So, again, we thought it was going to be a very impactful golf course when it opened. And so far that seems to be the case, the TPC Wisconsin. Big stuff going on this week in golf. Today was the first day of practice for girls golf in the state of Wisconsin. You can check out the five things to watch that I wrote ahead of today's opening day of practice. There was one thing, though, Gary, I wanted to call attention to, because as I go and update the coaching directory every year, I'm always, it brings a smile to my face when I see former golfers, especially here in the girls' season, former women's golfers at the college level coming back to coach. And the one that really stood out, well, actually a couple, Allie Blomquist of a former University of Wisconsin golfer, the first NCAA qualifier, in fact, and now a member of the UW Athletics Hall of Fame, is taking over at New Richmond. She's been a math teacher there for the last 6 years, and this is her sixth year being as a math teacher. And the last 5 years, she's been a volunteer assistant for the team there. They're a very good team at the Division I level, have had a rich history of turning out kids to college golf. She's coming back to coach. And then Annie, and I hope I pronounce this right, Kukuli of Lake Geneva Badger. We remember her as Annie Gaugert. She played at Valparaiso and is the sister of Austin and Alex Gaugert. Alex, the golfer who Monday qualified for the 3M Open a couple weeks ago on the PGA Tour. And they are all the children of Jim Gaugert, who is one of the more likable club pros we've ever encountered in the state of Wisconsin. And a good teacher and a player in his own right. So they're coming back to coach. Annie will be at her alma mater at Badger High School in Lake Geneva. And then Sammy Grunder Callum of Portage is coming back to co-coach with Anastasia Kinney, a former UW Stout golfer, and Madison Williams, who played collegiately at UW Stevens Point. It's going to take three people to replace the likable Ed Carlson at Portage. Just really cool stuff. But Allie Blomquist, I mean, she's a legend, and she's just going to be, you know, one of, she's now just a math teacher. I think it's great. You know, she's a college legend, Gary, and she's given back here. And it's neat to see. We had about 20 coaching changes during the off season and, some neat names popping up, as taking over, some of these programs.
You know, Rob, I think back to my high school days and my high school golf team. I had so much fun playing high school golf, and our coach was a wonderful man and a beloved teacher, just a great guy, but really wasn't a coach. You know, he drove us to meets and that was it. Now I think it's wonderful that people like Allie Blomquist, who have all this great experience, can come back and give it back, and help young women and some of the guy coaches who have come back from college, playing in college to coach in high schools. They can help these kids improve. I that's wonderful.
We're and of course, you know, as people come in, others leave. One of the big departures from the coaching ranks, a really good, energetic young coach, Ryan Dollett with Social Central, the Falcons, the two-time defending WI Division I state champions. But he and his wife had their third child at the start of last golf girls golf season in August, and he's also a Phi Ed teacher. And this is where, you know, different situations in different parts of the state, I think maybe sometimes, you know, people lose sight of it. And he teaches in a K-8 school district. He teaches Phi Ed. The district feeds into Wastosha Central, but it's independent of, it's a K-8 school district for the school building that he teaches in and a couple others. And then the Wastosha Central is apparently its own district. And, so the time constraints there, both at home And with his job, he's also a middle school basketball coach, and that season overlapped with the girls golf. And as you know, Gary, girls golf matches can take a long time from the time you get in the van to go to them to the time you get home. And, so he's stepping aside, as the Falcons begin their run for a three-peat. And, I don't know if you saw who's taking over for him, but Mark Olson, the retired men's coach at UW Parkside and, current boys coach at Wasilla Central will be taking over. And, I guess we could call Mark a friend of Talking.Golf. He's a great guy and someone who continues to give back to any program that needs a good coach. It seems, you know, he steps in and, you know, he's got what 30, 40 years of coaching history now behind him. He's got a golf facility named after him for Pete's sake.
He does at Parkside. And it seems to me, Rob, it's over 50 years now that he's coached the boys team. I think it's a half century of coaching. Boys golf, high school golf. That is so cool that he's coming back and he's also going to coach the girls team. He can't stay away. He's a good guy and he's a good player. So, you know, and he told me a year or two ago that, you know, when he stops being able to engage with the kids, when they're rolling their eyes, you know, that's when he knows it's going to be time to step aside. But he said they're still listening to me. They seem engaged in what I'm saying. And, it's pretty cool that he has given back so much to the game. It's pretty cool that he's taken over the girls program.
Well, and he's going to have a pretty cool team, with a lot of experience coming back, with the Walker twins. And then, he's got one of the, top four freshmen in the state coming in as well. Her name is Camille DeLost, and she gained a lot of experience over the summer. So they're going to be a very formidable team, in a state that's full of great golfers and great teams. And, you know, we've got Izzy Stricker back as the defending Division One state champion, Prescott going for four in a row in Division Two with an almost, you know, losing Ava Soleil to Wisconsin and a couple other gals to the college ranks. And, so it's going to be, there's a lot of, you know, teams that got better. There's going to be a lot of great young players. There's a lot of kids that keep working hard to move up the ranks. So, it's going to be a very, very fun year of, girls golf. The first matches can be played on Thursday and, state championship back at University Ridge again this year. I believe it's the 10th and 11th of October, if that's my correct Monday, Tuesday. So we can look forward to that. Last but not least, Gary, we got a tease. We'll be back again at the end of the week to preview the, what number U.S. or Wisconsin State Open is it? It's over 100, but
it is. Yeah.
It'll be the Wisconsin State Open next week at Century World. The last chance qualifier was the last opportunity to get entrance into the field today. And Clayton Tribue, a guy who played golf for the Wisconsin Badgers last season after a four-year career at Davidson University, shot a 200 par 68, shared medalist honors with young Cody Getzky out of Heartland. Of course, Cody, a former drive, chip, and putt national finalist. He goes to IMG Academy. Plays a lot of golf regionally and nationally against kids his age. Doesn't play a lot of junior golf in Wisconsin, but comes back and tries to qualify for the Stadium State Open. Qualified for the Stadium last year. Qualifies for the State Open today with a 68. And seven spots punched today. Chris Zachman of Milwaukee. Joe Forsen, a UW Green Bay golfer from Edgerton. Drew Otto, a professional from Keewaskum. Danny Sinicki, who just wrapped up his college career at Parkside out of Menominee Falls, and Brent Quaddy, a former Edgewood College golfer now living at Windsor, in Windsor, Wisconsin, Monroe native. They are the seven to qualify, and it's going to be a great field, Gary, and we'll talk more about it later in the week, but I don't know about you. I'm excited. We saw you had in Sweet Spot today some further reasons to get excited about the State Open, because last week on the Canadian tour, we had more great showings by our guys there, especially, what was it, Thomas Longbella and Jordan Hahn. Jordan won't be in the field, but Thomas Longbella finished 13th at the Windsor Championship, and Harrison Ott of Brookfield George Kneiser missed the cut, but I think it was one of those where the cut came at like 7 under par. It was insane up there last week.
It was extremely low scoring up there. I couldn't believe some of the scores. Having all those guys come back for the State Open, Rob, and high school girls golf starting, and we're less than 4 weeks away from the Marquette Intercollegiate at Erin Hills, start of the college golf season. Summer's flying by, but there's still stuff left.
I thought it was just me. I just, you know, it, you know, the first day of high school golf, you know, much like, you know, back when we had kids that were playing, you know, high school football, and it seemed like those practices start, you know, before anything. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, your summer gets condensed to about a month. And it felt that way this year, but you know, you look back on it, we've had, you know, AmFam Championship. We've had, you know, the U.S. Senior Open. And then of course our usual complement of junior, amateur, women's amateur, men's amateur, you know, the WPGA section events. It's just been a very brisk summer with a lot to write about. And I think that's why you kind of, at least this last weekend, I finally had a chance to do some things on a catch up basis. And I'm going, boy, where did the summer go? I can't believe that I haven't filled out an expense report in like 6 months.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited for the State Open. It's a great field, maybe one of the best fields ever, maybe the best field ever. When you look at the quality of the mini tour players coming back and former champions, and you know, two guys who qualified for the U.S. Senior Open, Brad Lanning and Mick Smith are in the field. It's going to be a great field. It's going to be a good week up there at Century World. I can't wait to see how they play the same course, maybe just a tiny bit shorter than what was played during the U.S. Senior Open. I can't wait to see what the scoring is like, Rob.
I was intrigued by what I saw on the tournament page, Gary, as I started. I've started the field breakdown this week, but one of the things that they've posted in its own box, number 9 will be a par 4. And that was a big point of discussion at the U.S. Senior Open, but on the Wisconsin State Open tournament page, it said, based on the feedback and statistics from the U.S. Senior Open, the 9th hole at Century World we played as a par 4. It is a really, really good, really, really tough par 4. There aren't a lot of hole locations. They found enough for the U.S. Senior Open. My guess is they're going to play one tee box and one tee box only. They may try to move it up a little bit, possibly, but I'm not sure there's a benefit to that. But, you know, that could be that hole in the middle of the round that determines who wins there on that 36-hole finale.
It very well could be, and I'm anxious to see how that hole sets up, because they grew some of the fairway on the right side past the creek. They let it grow into 3 and 4 inch rough, and I'm guessing that they're going to cut some of that down and make that fairway a little wider and give them a little bit bigger target to hit off the tee. And if you can hit that right side of the fairway, it really shortens up the approach into that green that isn't very deep, Rob. So yeah, I didn't realize it was going to be a par 4 for these guys, and that is going to be a pivotal hole.
So it will again break that down here later this week, but it's shaping up to be a really fun time. One other thing from the from Gary's sweet spot today, there was also the Iowa Open, kind of the last state open that I like to call it the Dan Woltman Tour. Danny won like 3 of those about 5 summers ago. And Zach Burry of Appleton finished T2 down in Iowa at Blue Top Ridge in Riverside, Iowa. Final round 66. He shot a 17 under 199 and finished 4 shots off the pace. Kaylor Steeger struggled to a final round 75, but still finished T7 at 10 under. So between the Canadian Tour guys, as Gary said, the mini tour guys, the guys who have qualified, all the great college golfers that we have that'll be competing from Marquette, Wisconsin, and elsewhere, the junior golfers, the club professionals. It's going to be a wonderful, wonderful 3 days at Century World next week. And you can look for that podcast Friday night, Saturday morning here on Wisconsin.golf. Gary, I think we're going to have to rest up for that. So let's call it a podcast, and we will talk again later this week.
Okay, Rob, I'll see you this week. Well, I'll see you on Monday morning, right?
Monday morning, that's for sure. Absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
Friday.
For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.